once again to You Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. I'm Brad Howard, and John Barbin's on the phone with me. And today, we're going to kind of extend a little bit on an email I sent out last week based on, I guess the pervasiveness of steroids and kind of talk about that a little bit more because I don't, John and I have been talking about a couple of things a little while ago regarding steroids, but we also, like this past weekend, when I was, dealing with the grief of, my uncle passing or whatever, I got talking to my sister's husband about some stuff, and he was just telling me about some of his friends that were on and all this stuff and some of the crazy stuff they were doing, and it's almost like a mad scientist. So we're going to kind of talk about some of this stuff and kind of maybe clear some misconceptions about some things and kind of maybe open your eyes to a couple other possibilities as well. So, John, why don't you go ahead and kind of start us off, kind of get into what you think we're going to really need to get into, and we'll go from there.
Sure. We're just going to just talk about how pervasive drug use is and how extensive it is. Like, I don't think people really understand how how many drugs there are, how they actually flow around, how much people will take. The difference between how much we've got any scientific data on versus how much is recreationally used, the kind of experiments, basically any guy who's using is a kind of a little mini experiment of one, and he doesn't really, it's not like he's referring to scientific literature on how to do it. It's, for example, in medicine, like in evidence-based medicine, there is research done on how, a particular pathway in the body works and then how, a particular drug may or may not affect that pathway. And then, you use it at a particular dose and then that dose does or doesn't do something. And then they work from there to come up with, the concept of how much of a drug you take to overcome a particular symptom or, issue. So that's kind of how you end up with, take 10 days of antibiotics and that should get rid of whatever sort of infection. Okay, done. Or if you have a headache, you take two Advils. Like, there's a bunch of research that led up to that dose being effective, relatively safe, like all of those kind of things. But with steroid use, there is none of that really background research. I mean, there's some, but it's the guys that are using now have taken it way further than any published data we have. So it ends up being sort of stored in a cloud of collective consciousness with a bunch of people who sort of share with each other what they've tried. And so it's not really – there's no catalog or book you can go to and find out exactly how much – I guess there are handbooks and stuff, but none of it's peer-reviewed. It's just people writing based on their personal experiences. So – I guess you're just hoping that they're not lying in those books and there's no reference point besides other people trying it. So I guess over time, as guys keep trying it, they're building up the database of what sort of standard, I guess. You can't say industry. I guess you could say industry standard. I don't really know if you could call it an industry, but it's a different thing and has nothing in it. You can't really compare it to peer-reviewed science. It's its own sort of growing body of evidence, so to speak, but just without any statistical analysis or any peer review. So because of that, it's really hard to know exactly what's working and exactly what isn't.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And I guess the reason this kind of blew my mind just thinking about it, it was the fact that, me not realizing how many of the people like in MMA and stuff like that were actually getting caught for doing steroids and stuff. And these guys aren't very big. And so kind of, to me, I started looking back at some of the workouts they were talking about and things like that. And I was like, well, damn, if these guys are on roids, it's not making them bigger, but it's giving them the ability to do a lot more work in the gym, which, these guys are showing their workouts that they do and stuff like that. And it's kind of like, well, does that even matter? Does that work out even the best? Because you've got this whole new large pink elephant in the room that is doing a lot for that person that you don't get access to unless you're doing the same things. So it kind of even goes back to the simple fact that it's almost every idol or everyone you could possibly look up to in, trying to get a better body that's in kind of the public eye. is likely on something.
Yeah, I think by definition, once you're in, to get to the public eye, to get to that level, it's kind of like when they catch athletes and they're like, oh, we caught one. I'm like, you really think that's the only guy? Do you think everybody else made it to that level and can compete with that guy clean, and he's the only one who had to use to get there? To me, it's the reverse. It's the bar is set with the drugs. So if hitting 50 or 60 home runs per season at the pro level, like that requires drugs. It's been kind of basically definitively shown to break that barrier, you need to use drugs, because basically every guy who's ever broken that home run barrier, all were exposed for being on something. So to me, it's not like, oh, those are the three guys that used. To me, it's like, to even get to that level, everyone has to use. So it's kind of like you look around and like all of the top guys are using, and now all of a sudden nobody can hit more than 40 home runs. Like, come on, give me a break. Something's going on. So the bar, it's not like there's one or two guys in the NFL using. It's probably most. And then there's some genetic freaks who just, you know, are bigger, stronger, and faster their whole lives and sort of got there. But like you said, with the MMA guys, like most of them are using, and it's to do, you know, to be at that level, the level that people want to watch, that's a drug-induced level. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, they're freak shows. I want to see the unregulated all-drug Olympics. I want to see, like I want to see Usain Bolt go on as much drugs as he can and see if he can actually run the 100 meters in 8 seconds, just to see how fast a human body can actually go. And admit it, too. Actually, Pilon was talking. He's like, it would be cool if he would just be like, look, I'm going to show you the exact drugs I'm using. I'm going to show you how long I use them for and you know, the training. And I'm going to try to run 8 seconds, 100 meters in 8 seconds. And so at least we'll see how fast a human can actually go. I don't think anyone gives a crap if they're on drugs or not. People just want to see the spectacle, right? Like, let's just say if all professional sports had, you know, a 50 or 60% drug usage rate. And let's say they actually all stopped. Everyone who was using stopped. And then all of the sports just got kind of slower, a little bit sloppier. The players got way more injured. And then it just, the level of intensity just came down. It wouldn't be as fun to watch because we've already seen it at the level that it's at. Like it's no fun to watch it backpedal. It can only go forward. Like the idea of sports is to watch the extreme, not to watch the like coming back from the extreme. So once you've seen someone hit 70 home runs, the next thing is 80. Like no one's going to be impressed if somebody hits 40. It's who cares? I've already seen 70. Right. So now I want to see 100. Now I want to see 100.
Yeah. How many are people hitting now? I haven't even followed.
Since Maguire and Sosa and Bonds did all of that, it's back. It's I think maybe one or two guys might get to 50 now, but that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think it's that much. But you know, the thing that kind of blew my mind was when the A-Rod thing came out back in the day, or not back in the day, but I mean, this past year, I guess it was. I mean, this guy's arguably probably one of the best players
ever.
Ever, right? And he's been on since he was like 16 or 18 or something, they were saying.
He's huge. He's a 240-pound shortstop. Like, what were people thinking when they saw him? That guy's just massive.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's like, is that not crazy? I mean, this guy is, I mean, obviously all that, same thing with Barry Bonds, obviously all the talent in the world and still felt like they needed to go that route, you know?
Well, I don't know. It's like Ken Caminiti too, like half of baseball's using. It's, you know, I think Jose Canseco was the only honest guy in baseball. He just was like, hey, everyone's using, you know.
Sure.
He's just like the best is there's a highlight of him hitting a home run like that was so ridiculously far. It was just absurd. And then when the camera goes back on, it's awesome because when you see him on camera after hitting it, he looks a little embarrassed that it went that far. I think he almost has like a, oh, geez, I shouldn't have done that look. Like he doesn't stand looking at it all proud of it. He kind of just, he almost looks a bit surprised. He's like, whoa, like that's, I didn't think it could go that kind of thing. It's one of the best highlights ever because after being in that kind of culture, you kind of, because when you become that big and that strong, you actually surprise yourself at how big and strong you're getting. And so every now and then he'll, you know, I don't know. I just totally related with the look on his face. He He totally looked like he was just like, whoa, I didn't think I could hit it that far. And yeah, he almost had a sort of a comical half smirk, half embarrassment. He's like, sorry, I didn't mean to hit it that far, sort of look on his face.
Right. It was kind of like what you were saying back in the day. I mean, you wrote about it in the first part of Adonis when, you know, you were benching or whatever, and you know, you thought that you were all mad at the guy because you thought he was like picking up on the bar and he wasn't even touching it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally. Well, yeah. And I mean, you know, I don't know. There's no such thing as roid rage. If somebody's using and they're a jerk, if they were a jerk before, they're just a jerk with too. It's the same person. Like, I know lots of guys who use and they're not any more aggressive. They're just the same person. They're just bigger. So it's,
right.
I mean, you know, now if you're kind of an insecure guy and you use steroids to as a kind of an artificial security and not to actually sort of come to terms with yourself or whatever it is and just learn to be secure socially without them, then you're just going to be a big insecure guy. So that just makes it worse, right? So
yeah,
and then you may act on that bigness like as if you deserve more respect than you do or something like that.
Sure. I mean, that even kind of goes into identity a little bit. We talked about it before. But, okay, like a perfect example, there's my brother-in-law. We were talking over the past, I think this is a Tuesday night. And, you know, he was telling me about a buddy of his that, I mean, this guy, he really does not know how to work out at all. Basically, what he does is he does bench and buys. He never does legs, never does back, never does anything else. But, you know, he'll be able to bench about, you know, 300, 280, 300 pounds or something like that. And then, but it's funny because he's always on and off, you know, as far as steroids. And what'll happen is he'll go on. And as soon as he goes on, his bench will blow up. I mean, within 2 or 3 weeks. I mean, it's like ridiculous, up to like 400 pounds. So he'll gain like 100 pounds on his bench in no time. And then, but it's funny because as soon as everybody knows when he's on because he always wears this hoodie and always has his hood pulled up around the gym trying to act like he's a badass. And everybody's making fun of him, like even his other buddies that are on too. They're like, hey, dude, come on, man. You want to do some legs today? And he's like, no, man.
Go back to the bench.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to the bench. But, yeah, it's just funny because even the difference between when this guy's on and off, it's even like his identity with it. It's like, oh, I'm a badass now because I'm on. So I'm putting my hood on. I'm actually putting the hood over my face and walking around, you know, that type of deal. So it's that part was interesting to me as well. But kind of going back to the whole thing that, you know, he doesn't know what he's doing. He's just throwing stuff on the bar and letting the drugs take care of the rest.
No, that's all you have to do. Is as long as you lift something, you'll grow. You don't really particularly need to be like your sets, your reps, your rest, the periodization of your none of that matters when you're using. Like you can go in and do the same workout over and over again and just keep growing. You don't have to be all that intelligent with your workout program. Now, I would guess if you used as well as used a good workout, you'd just grow even faster. I would guess.
Right.
But I don't know that having all that of an intelligent workout program is much on the list for guys who are using drugs. I think they're just kind of stubborn and just do their own thing. So, I mean, that's the fact that they've turned to using drugs is part of the stubbornness, right? So,
right.
I don't think they really want anyone else to tell them how to work out. They're going to come up with their own program regardless.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't accuse too many of them of being too smart either. So,
yeah, I mean, it's like I said, the whole thing is really, really interesting. Even talking about the Usain Bolt thing, I think there would be a market for it. I think that if somebody like that would come out, you know, because you know, he's a pro athlete as far as track and stuff. I mean, you know, these guys get paid, you know, sponsorship dollars and stuff. I mean, I think Marion Jones was getting, you know, quite a bit of money. But I wonder how much money he could raise by just saying, look, man, this is what I'm going to do. And just get a TV thing and say, look, this is what I'm going to do. You guys can say it's stupid or whatever, but let's just go for it. And then
I think it would be the most interesting thing. But I don't know that since the laws changed and steroids have become demonized legally, it's everyone.
Yeah, but he's in Jamaica, dude.
Yeah, but where's he going to? Yeah, I understand that, but where's he going to? I don't know. Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess he could do it there and then just nationally broadcast it everywhere. I don't know. It's this whole BS of like this fairness thing and, you know, steroids are cheating. But everyone, if you, okay, so I'm going to make the absurd argument. If that's cheating, then so is getting a nutritionist and so is getting a better trainer.
Like, it's even worse. I haven't seen anybody do this or had anybody talk about this, but let's say,
or so is having taller players in a sport where height matters. Like, well, there's no such thing as fairness. It's just, like, you know what I mean? Like, now you're just drawing, or like people who train at altitude, that's no different than blood doping, right? So like, if you and I go to do endurance training, in Denver or in Colorado, like when we're up way above sea level, our red blood cell count will go up, and our capillaries will change. Everything will change. And then when we come back down to sea level to compete, we just got more red blood cells compared to the next guy over, which is technically, if you use a drug and you can increase your red blood cell count using drugs, that's against the rules, but there's no rule that says you can't go train at altitude. So tons of Olympic athletes just go train at altitude. So they're always trying to get an edge. It's just, how do you go about getting the edge? It's like, well, why not just level the playing field by letting everyone use the same amount of drugs?
Yeah, you'd either have to be like NASCAR and say, all right, here's your training protocol, here's your standard training protocol, this is all you can use. Here's your standard nutrition protocol, this is all you can use. You'll be tested on it every week. You'll have random people come by your house and see all this stuff. I mean,
yeah,
and
you can only use a certain amount of turbocharge in the car, certain size of engine, and all that kind of certain fuels.
Yeah. Everything's standard.
Yeah, but for some reason in sports, the only thing that's not allowed is drugs, but everything else is like, you can train however you want, you can eat however you want. I guess because they know that none of that stuff matters all that much, and everyone's more or less going to get to about the same degree, and that the only thing that can really push you past somebody else is the addition of drugs.
Yeah, I wonder, I thought about this the other day, I wonder if people are getting like LASIK surgery to increase their vision to 20/10 or beyond, even if they don't need it.
Does it do that? Or does it just
I think my brother's 20/10. He had it done.
Oh, and so there's another one. Is that an enhancement or not?
Yeah, I mean, if you normally wear glasses and you get LASIK surgery, I mean, I've always said that I would consider that performance enhancing. But what if?
Well, how about this? How about if you get injured, how come you're allowed to even have a surgery? You know what I mean? Like if you tear up a muscle or something, well, you've just proven that your body can't hack it, and surgery is an external intervention, no different than a drug. Like if taking drugs prevents you from getting injured, and that's illegal, taking drugs, but then you don't take drugs and you rip up your shoulder from just repetitive use, like let's say a baseball pitcher, and then you have it reconstructed and you're back on the field, why is the reconstruction allowed but the drugs ahead of time aren't?
Or even worse, what if you get something like Tommy John surgery, mm-hmm. where when you come back, you throw harder than you were? Because that's pretty common, I think, for that after a year or two.
Oh, I don't think we're that far away. I don't think we're far away. Like maybe 2-3, maybe 10, 20 years from now, 30 years, by the time where you can prosthetically reinforce or improve the mechanics of joints to the point where you've got guys who can throw 100 miles an hour for a 15-year career because they've, you know, prophylactically you go in and actually like build up certain joint areas and like why is it, you know, right now it's okay to break it, then fix it, and then you're saying the fix might even be better than it was before. Mm-hmm. So what's to stop people from getting that done ahead of time?
Even some type of gene therapy that would do it.
Oh yeah. So what like places like China do, they select the parents and then the kids for like athletics. So like right. they literally breed athletes. So why is mm-hmm. that okay? But it's like of all the ways of dividing out what's fair and unfair, just drugs got picked on, but there's a million other things that technically could be classed exactly the same way.
Right. Yeah, it's like I say, it's an interesting argument all the way around about what's legal, what's not, and all that other. I think it's more just the legalities of it, and
which is arbitrary. Things that are legal aren't something being legal or illegal has nothing to do with whether or not it's fair or not fair.
Right. Exactly.
And so that's the gap in it all, right? Like people inherently understand fairness. Like just human beings in general get when they've been deceived or ripped off. But that never has anything to do with whether or not something's legal or not.
Right. So, I mean, it's like, where does it stop? Because, you know, you can, there are people that, you know, back in the, let's say baseball, I mean, or even, you know, football, you know, using, you know, stimulants or whatever, you know, greenies and all that stuff. I mean, that stuff goes back a long ways. I mean, caffeine, you know, I mean, it just goes. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's like a bar you have to set and say, this is okay, this isn't.
Well, and when steroids weren't illegal, it wasn't a big deal. Everyone used them. And then, you know, one particular politician decided to make his mission to get rid of steroids and try to have a new war on a new drug. And then all of a sudden they became like, you know, public enemy number one, and, you know, a whole campaign to prove that they're somehow bad for, I don't know, bad for the nation or something. And all of a sudden they're illegal and every, you know, there's this demonized status with them instead of them being, because their genesis, they started as just a smart, innovative way to make your athletes stronger. Like, yeah. with the Eastern Bloc, they weren't always like that. They were like the way they're classified now. And it's country to country. Some countries you can still just go in, buy them, and take them. It's kind of like a North American thing to have them as picked on as they are.
Well, I think for that guy who, you know, I think Mitchell or who, I think he was the one that started up. I mean, I think it was a smart move on his part because he actually picked a battle he could win.
Oh, well, yeah, exactly. It's so petty. There's so many other things for politicians to deal with. Picking on steroids just seems like such an unbelievable waste of time.
Sure.
Like, how about maybe address the housing crisis and not a few guys taking drugs just because they feel like they want to be a bit stronger? Like, seriously.
I've always said, I'm like, was steroids a big problem in sports, or was it, you know, the real drugs that people are using, you know, cocaine, all the ecstasy, all these other drugs that people are getting into, you know?
Well, yeah, I don't know that steroids ruined anybody's life ever.
Well, I mean, other than maybe Lala Zedo, but
yeah, but he had brain cancer, which was never proven to have anything to do with using steroids.
Right. So, yeah. I mean, it's, like I said, I don't know. I mean, I always thought that. I was like, okay, so if I use steroids once and I get caught, then I get, you know, I get put on, I get suspended for a month. I get caught twice, I get suspended for a year. Third time, I get suspended forever. But, you know, people can smoke as much weed and get caught with as much coke or whatever as they want, and they just go to rehab.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's because those other ones, they don't assume have anything to do with performance enhancing.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if you're talking about role models and stuff like that, and I think that was one of the things they worried about, is that, you know, I don't think it was the performance enhancing aspects of it that they were really keying in on. It was what do our kids see? You know, are our kids going to start doing steroids and all this stuff? You know, instead of, you know, but then again, I mean, you're seeing, you know, all the other guys getting caught and, you know, beating their wives and all this other stuff.
How many times do they have to get caught, and how many people have to show that they were just blatant liars? Like, like Marion Jones, 5 gold medals, stripped of all 5 because she was on drugs. And she stood at the stand and said, I've never took drugs, and then got caught. Like, you're such a liar. Like, and what about the girl who didn't get the medals? Like, for every gold medal she was awarded, those medals belong to somebody else, right?
Well, yeah. It's like, I didn't get to stand up on the thing. I didn't.
And just didn't get an endorsement, and you weren't a big name. It's like, you know, and I'm not picking on her. I'm just saying you mean to tell me the other girls in that race weren't using drugs? Like, that's just the standard that's set. Like, if a kid the thing is, it's not a matter of role modeling. It's the numbers. It's always the numbers. If she's running like a 10 flat 100 meters, 10 seconds flat, like for a woman, that's like, think that whatever she was doing, it was fast, right?
Mm-hmm.
And some younger girl wants to get into sprinting, and she's clean, and she doesn't know Marion Jones is using drugs. And she's like, that's my idol. I want to run a 10. I want to be like Marion Jones. And you know, the younger girl trains for years and years and years and is running in the 11s or running around 12. And she's like, well, how the hell does she run that fast? That kid is eventually going to learn in the subculture of sprinting that, oh, the only way a woman can run that fast is with drugs. And she's right. so that kid is faced with the realization on their own, you know, just sitting in their room one night going, man, this was all a lie. Like, I'm never going to be an Olympic level sprinter unless I use drugs. Like, I've dedicated my life to this, and I only now realize the joke was on me the whole time, that there's no way I can run that fast. And that's the real sort of disrespect or slap in the face with the whole system pretending like drugs aren't there. Because the kids are like, you know what, disclose right away. Be like, look, you can't run this fast, kid. You just can't. I'm using drugs. And, you know, if you did it that way, at least the kid knows. They're like, oh, right, okay, I get it. For me to hit 60 home runs, I have to use drugs for 15 years. You know, if you set your idol at a point where they're not admitting to you what they're doing, that's worse than if they just came out and said, hey, this, you know, you want to go this fast? This is what I use.
Right. Because
at least that way they can make an informed choice.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they're going to get caught up in the lifestyle. They're going to try to push it. They're going to try to get, like, you know, their parents are going to, you know, they want people to be proud of them. And they're in there going, oh, my God, I didn't know that I can't go that fast. Like, I didn't know I'm never going to make the team without using drugs. Like, this isn't what I thought I was involved in. And now they're sort of stuck with the choice. Do you abandon it and look like a quitter? Or do you try to get there, right? So it's
right.
It's kind of like people get into bodybuilding. You might be able to do your first show clean. But if you think you're going any further, you just, you know, there's just a certain amount of drugs, and it goes up and up and up, and then you either use them or you don't, and that's it. It's not a moral judgment. It's not a right or wrong thing. It's just that's what that is, and you're either in or you're out.
Right, and kind of going back into talking about why people get wrapped into the whole thing. I mean, it's kind of this big commitment and consistency thing. So, I mean, you commit yourself to doing this. And you're lifting, and you know, you're spending all of your time, you know, focusing on all this stuff, and you're doing this and this. And we'll talk about, you know, getting bigger for now, just to make it simpler. But, you know, and you, let's say you've put 2 years into it, and you've only got to a certain point. And it sounds kind of like what you talked about earlier, like in the book. You know, you got up to a certain point, and then you just didn't grow anymore. Everything was just painful, and you're sitting there, and you're like, but I committed to getting to this size.
Yeah, I committed to myself to be a certain body weight, and I'm like, well, how come I can't get there? And I'm like,
right,
well, I'm not willing to wait till I'm 30 to get there. So I just kind of looked around, like, well, how do people do this? And then,
right, and so then at that point, if you what I say is you're kind of in a hot state at that point, because everything else doesn't matter. You know, what's all the other stuff in your mind at that moment? You're going to make the decision based on that goal and where you've been traveling, that. Okay, my focus and attention the whole time has been on this particular thing. So you're more likely to use at that point than you would at the very beginning when you're just starting out going, hey man, I want to get big. All I got to do is work out. And that person's going to be a lot more likely to use than someone that is at the very beginning that thinks all they need to do is work out and they'll get big. Or maybe eat more and all that stuff. So you start out with kind of a virgin mind with basically no experience in it. And then as you move along, you know, you hit a wall, and then all of a sudden you realize that to kind of jump over this wall, you need extra help. And anything that any preconceived notions you may have had, you know, 2 years ago about it, in your mind you're thinking to yourself, you know, oh, that's not that bad. Oh, I can control for that. Oh, that's not going to matter for me. Nobody's going to be able to – nobody – here's the big thing. Nobody's going to know that I'm on, so it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell people that I'm not on. I just won't use – here, it probably would start like this. I just won't use that much, you know, and I'll get bigger. And then that way nobody will think I'm on. And, you know, when people ask, I could just lie and be like, nah, man, it's certain nutrition or whatever. Because I'm not on.
Yeah, it's the naive belief that you can just pick how big you want to be and get there.
Right.
And then from there, and then once you kind of, because you see other guys that are that big, and until you've like been in those circles, you don't really know what it takes to get that big. And then once you start chasing it, then you're on your way, and you're like, oh, I get it. I get now what the degrees of bigness are and what the degrees of drugs to get to each level of bigness are. So there's almost two ways of looking at it. There's like, do I want to be as big as I can be clean, or what size do I want to get to with drugs? Like this like basically limitless ability to grow. Well, first of all, there's no limit. There's always limits, but the ceiling of how big you can get. There's two ceilings. There's two ranges. There's as big as you can get clean, within reason on how much time you actually want to spend working out and all that. And then there's kind of a variable ceiling of how much drugs you want to use and how big you can force yourself to get with the drugs. And those are two different limits. And then if your eye is always on the drug-induced limit, you're always going to be disappointed if you're not using drugs, because you're going to be – you may be all the way to your genetic limit without using drugs, and you may look really good. But if your eye is just past that, you may always be disappointed, because you're just like, well, why can't I just be a little bit bigger? And it's like, right. Well, what made you think you could be that big anyways? And it's because you looked over at somebody else who is using drugs but never told you.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the evidence is clear. You can be pretty damn big using drugs, like really big. But it's hard. But most guys don't know where the line is between clean and drugs. Like they can't look across 50 guys in a gym and pick out every single guy who's clean at his limit and every single guy who's gone past this limit using drugs. So, like, obviously the fringe guys are obvious. You can tell the biggest guys. You'd be like, oh, obviously he's huge. But there's a gray area in the middle where you like kind of look and you're like, I can't tell if that guy's using or not.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting because, like, there are two things that I know to be true. Number one, if anything ever claims to give you steroid-like gains, I mean, that's obviously a blatant lie because...
Well, unless it's steroids.
Right, unless it's steroids itself, because that stuff just... It's so potent that... I mean, it's so potent, like, I put it this way, it was funny, and even though it's technically in a steroid, but I think Pilon was putting on his blog that he heard a trainer telling a woman about some new thing called clenbuterol or whatever that he could get for, and it would help her lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
And this lady's like, oh, okay, cool. She's probably thinking it's a supplement or whatever.
It's a black market drug, and she doesn't even know that.
Yeah, she doesn't even know it. Next thing you know, she's going to get just like ridiculous results, you know, based on this drug. And then he's going to be like, see, I told you. And he's going to get – that's the thing. He'll get referrals from her because, oh, this guy got me – I lost so much weight under him, and just the workouts and stuff like that, they were amazing, and his advice. And yeah, I mean, he got me some this one thing that it kind of helped a little bit, you know, but, you know, it was really what he was telling me.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting, because we worked – when we meet him, worked at the supplement shop back when we were in undergrad. There was this supplement that was – it was just a mix of herbs. Like, there wasn't much in it. But women swore by this thing, and it was marketed directly at women, and it was called Prenzy 99, and it was like women just swore by it, like how it helped them lose weight and gave them so much energy, and they were all like it was like cocaine to these people, and these women would always come in and go straight over and say I need two bottles of that Prenzy 99 stuff, and I'm like, really, you really like it? They're like, oh my god, this is the best stuff ever, and I look at the ingredient list, and it's just two or three benign, like really pointless herbs like ginseng and chromium. There's just nothing in it, right? And I would always talk to Brad and whoever else at the store. I'm like, how the hell is this stuff doing this? And then it turned out that company got busted for that product being full of ephedrine. So those women had no idea that they were dosing massive amounts of ephedrine every day. And then that made perfect sense to me. I'm like, oh, okay, that's why they kept coming in for that stupid thing, because it was full of ephedrine. Now, if they knew that they were taking ephedrine, or if they knew that that thing was full of ephedrine, they, you know, because at the time ephedrine had a bit of a hardcore bad rap, you know, that only bodybuilders use and it's like too much, they wouldn't have used it. They're like, no, but they're like, oh, but this stuff's natural, it's okay because it's natural. So a lot of it's just in their head. Like, people are really hypocritical. Same thing with the clenbuterol. If she knew it was an illegal, you know, product on the black market, that, you know, she could have very well even had the version for horses. You know, she might have been like, well, I'm not taking that. But if the trainer just frames it like, no, this just, you know, it just helps a little bit. You know, so it's all kind of in people's heads. Like, people sort of have a preconceived notion of what's socially acceptable. So if she just never is told that she's taking a relatively hardcore drug that's only accessible via the black market, then she might be like, no, I'm not going to do that. But without that knowledge, she'll be like, oh yeah, you know, it's just what people do.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, That's the one thing when you have somebody that is getting you results. I mean, a lot of times people aren't even going to look. They're not going to go online to find out what it is. They're just going to be like, oh, yeah, I mean, I got this stuff that my trainer's been giving me. You know, I trust him. And, you know, it seems to work okay. You know, next thing you know, she's like ripped out of her frame and she's like, holy shit.
Yeah, well, it's, yeah, I don't know. People just don't get like how strong that stuff is. Maybe not that type of stuff like Klimbu, but the steroids themselves are super potent. And I don't think people realize how much guys use. Like the amount that we've seen in scientific research is nothing compared to the amount that guys are using.
Give an example.
Well, the amount that we've, you know, like for instance, like hormone replacement for guys who have been clinically shown to have low testosterone, they may get like 200, 250 milligrams over the course, like a long-acting testosterone at that dose for a couple of weeks. So for like a two-week period, they may only be dosed with about 250 milligrams of testosterone. And that lasts for 14 days before they go in for another shot. Whereas the amount that's been studied and shown to be effective for muscle gaining would be 500 or 600 milligrams per week in a normal guy who already has normal testosterone. So we're talking that's you know more than double. And then the amount that I know certain guys use is 10 times higher than that. So like 5,000 milligrams a week.
Oh.
So there is no scientific literature on that dose. I mean, the highest. So I know guys who take 10 times more than the highest dose ever studied.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's not including, they also take insulin on top of that and growth hormone.
Right.
So, and I think some guys have experimented with IGF-1. I think they've managed to get their hands on that type of drug too. So it's insulin-like growth factor. And, there's the dosages are really high. I just don't think people realize that huge guy in the gym that's like bench pressing 400 pounds. I don't think people realize how much extra drugs they're using. Like it's a lot. It's not just a little bit. It's a lot. So that's why I say the potential for growth is scalable to how much drugs you're going to use. Now, eventually that even stops. Like there's eventually another limit there where you probably just can't put any more drugs in you. I mean, I suppose you could just keep going, but I don't know what the consequences would be if you just keep going. It's weird because steroids seem to be the more they use, the better they get. Like a lot of things have a negative feedback loop where the more you, like, it sort of shuts itself down by putting more in. The body has a lot of redundant systems where there's some sort of negative feedback where you put more of a particular drug in and the receptor it's binding to, your body just pulls back the number of receptors. So as the drug goes up, the receptors go down, and it tries to keep you in the same spot. Whereas steroids seem to increase the receptor proliferation. So they not only is there more testosterone to bind, there's more receptors to bind to. So it's a feed-forward mechanism.
Hmm.
So they seem to be just the more you use, the better they get.
Right.
Or the more you. So I think the biggest, hugest guys you've ever seen, like the biggest pros, they're just the ones they probably start off as big as with high growth potential anyways, and then they've just taken way more drugs than everybody else.
Right.
There's no other explanation for it.
Well, just kind of give you an example of what Eric was telling me that his friend was on. I mean, and like I say, this guy really is no bigger than we are. You know, even roided out. I mean, he's not working out like crazy. I mean, he's probably a little bit bigger, like chest wise, but as far as just overall frame wise, just not really any bigger than we are. But
like standing side by side in a jacket, he just looked like
sure. Yeah. I mean, he looked about like us, or at least last I saw him. So I mean, he was on like Test, I think DECA, Winstrol, and I think there was something else that he was on as well. It was like four things that he was on at one time. So it wasn't just like he was like, oh, I'm going to get on Test.
Oh, nobody does one thing. Everyone mixes. Like people use like long acting oil based like that have like longer half lives, and then there's various forms of tests. Like some of them have a 2 or 3 day half life, some of them have like a 14 day half life, and there's ones that have all different levels of half life mixed into the same shot. And then guys typically stack multiple types of drugs that have different half-lives. So right. Certain things are like test suspension and water is like in and out in like a day. Mm-hmm. And then orals are in and out in like hours. Like you need to take those like two or three times a day. And then there's different action levels. So DECA is a long acting one. Enanthate's a long acting one. Cypionate and propionate are shorter. Sustanon's a mix of four. Finajet is different. And, you know, Primobalan's a long acting one. And then just an endless combination of them, depending what country you get them from. And that's like from the old, like I'm kind of probably a little bit antiquated with my knowledge of which ones are which. Cause back in the day when I was involved with it all, we basically got stuff that was either counterfeited or kind of leaked out the back door of major pharmaceutical companies, right? So it was like, it was a pharmaceutical brand, recognizable pharmaceutical brand. Nowadays they're being made in underground labs. So the raw materials get purchased and then guys just put them together themselves. So instead of getting Winstrol from Upjohn, like the actual major pharmaceutical company Upjohn, somebody now just around the corner from your house has a lab in his basement where he synthesizes his own version of Winstrol. You see what I'm saying? So it's like, mm-hmm. It's evolved now. I guess since the internet and everything, it's become significantly easier to purchase the raw ingredients and then kind of put them together yourself. Sure. But that means a lot of that stuff's not being produced in a pharmaceutical facility, so you don't know about the quality, like how, whether or not it's sanitary, whether or not it has any contamination. Like at least with the stuff that's come off like a truck or out the back door of a real pharmaceutical company, you can be guaranteed the thing is of high quality, it's clean, it's sanitary, it's safe for you. I mean, Christ, you're sticking this stuff right into your body, like you're injecting it. You're not even having the chance to eat it so you can puke it up if there's something wrong with it. Like once you inject something right into your muscle, it's in you. And if there's going to be a problem, you're going to notice right away. At the very least, if you eat something contaminated, like food poison, like it's got a bacteria, you at least have the chance to puke it back up.
Right.
But like if you just inject something that's contaminated, well, now you've got a problem.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy when you think about that, the fact that, I mean, even there were guys I was talking to that were talking about, I think it was Fenna, that they would go and you just go to the vet and you get it from the, it's like a horse steroid or whatever. You get it, you take it to your house, you crush it up or whatever, you filter it through coffee things.
Filters. Oh, it's insane what these people would do. And then there's like websites you can go to show you how to do like your own. Like it's nuts, and then people will turn around and inject that. Like,
yeah,
it's kind of nuts. Like I remember an undergrad, a buddy of ours in our kind of crew that we worked out with, big mm-hmm. big dude. He's I always suspected that he was using something. He was just too muscular to be clean, but he was studying to be a vet. And the day he got into vet school, he announced it at the gym, and the whole gym just went silent because everyone was like, "Oh my god, like this is our in for juice."
Nice.
Because this guy's going to have a never-ending – he'll just have a never-ending supply of drugs.
Right.
So it was kind of funny the reaction everyone in the gym had. All the guys who use were like, oh, awesome. Like, it's – I don't know. People don't realize if you're in that culture, there's like – if you've dealt in the black market for anything, at least for that type of stuff, it becomes – for drugs, it becomes pretty – everyone sort of knows each other, at least in your local region. Like right. Any guy who's using steroids in your town, they all pretty much know each other and who to buy from. It's not like a huge industry where there's like tons of nameless, faceless people. It gets small pretty fast, and you can trace where the drugs are coming from pretty easily and who to buy from. And it's all kind of word of mouth and people knowing each other and stuff. It's not like you look it up on the phone book and just like, well, I need to buy something. It's like everyone sort of. It gets tiny quick.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just regional. Like guys in our, guys here in where I'm from probably are one phone call away from knowing people where you are who mm-hmm. sell that far away, like 1,000 miles away. It's probably not that hard to trace where the major runners are in all those areas. So it's a different culture. It's kind of, and it's all based on like who do you think you can trust? Because there's significant amount of counterfeit too, right? So
yeah, that's
you wouldn't want to be, if you're selling, you wouldn't want to be selling pure counterfeit, because the person you sold to is going to be like, okay, I spent $600 on this stuff and I got nothing. Like, I didn't gain at all. And the stuff's so potent, you should gain for sure. So, but mm-hmm. what might happen is they charge you for, 30 shots at 200 milligrams of testosterone per shot, but really there's only 100 milligrams. So you still gain, you just don't gain as much as you should have. So you're relatively happy, but he made twice the profit. So like right. that kind of stuff goes on. Or if you buy like a stack from somebody, like two or three different drugs, and they instruct you to stack it all together, maybe only two of them have real drugs and one of them's sort of just BS, one of them's just benign oil. Mm-hmm. So they've managed to make more money that way. So it's not in their best interest to sell you complete garbage, but you know, if they can shave off or cut it a little bit so it doesn't have the dose it says, they're just gonna profit more.
Sure, and most people are gonna be so like out of the loop as far as what the stuff can do. I mean, we're sitting here telling you right now how potent it is, but for a lot of people,
The newbies won't know. Guys who've been around the block for a while, they'll know if they got screwed. But then what do you do? Call the Better Business Bureau? Like, these are the sort of the
those guys, I mean, those will be the people they wouldn't screw.
No, you can't. You can't really – well, no, you can't. You can't really – yeah, it's largely a trust economy. Like, if you don't know how what you're doing and you're kind of green and naive to it, you can get sort of taken advantage of. But as you kind of learn more about it, you no one can really pull a fast one on you.
Right.
The only problem is if that ever does happen, the sort of – the repercussions aren't necessarily clean. Like, it's not like you call, like, there's no legal recourse for it. This is all sort of doing it on your own.
Sure. So you got underground recourse.
Well, exactly. So it's not as tidy. There's not so much support.
Right. Yeah, I guess people probably are wondering why we would even bring this type of stuff up. But you know what? It's, like I say, it's just so prevalent, in society that I think it merits bringing up. The other reason, obviously, is that, going with AI and stuff like that, because I don't think people realize how much of a buffer AI actually is to a lot of things. Number one, like Pilon the other day was kind of cautioning me about talking about calories, talking about how low I go, and saying that, you don't want to get in the mix of people talking about you're promoting anorexia or bulimia or anything like that because you're talking about low calories. And I was like, well, technically I'm not, because, AI acts as a buffer for that. I have a goal waist. Once the waist gets to that point, then I quit. There's nothing. So that's the buffer. Same thing with, shoulders. It's the same thing. There's a buffer. There's a limit that I'm looking to get to. And then beyond that limit, there's no other goal. There's no other way to go. So, even the steroid route, pretty much, gets nipped in the bud for most people because, it's beyond the goal. It's beyond the goal.
Yeah, it would seem that the AI ratio seems to be about as big and as strong and as muscular as you can get. Well, I guess strength doesn't have anything to do with it. It seems to be about as big, muscular, and lean as you can get clean.
Right.
It seems to be the barrier.
Sure.
Somewhere around there. Like, from what I've seen and, comparing our size to guys I know who've competed like their first shows and they've been clean and stuff, it seems like that's right about the break point, and to push too much past it would seem to be either just an obsessive amount of training or drug use.
Right. And the other thing you're going to see, and I'll ask you to do this, because a lot of people will probably be listening and be like, yeah, right, you can grow infinitely, there's no such thing as a genetic limit. You can out-train your genetics, and beat your genetics and all this stuff. I mean, if you believe that, that's fine, but I'm going to ask you to do this. I mean, there's...
Well, do it and show us.
Well, number one, do it and show us, but number two, I mean, you can go online right now. I mean, you go to YouTube, you can go to Facebook, you can go, to any picture site, and you can go pick any major muscle-building guru you want to. You can go pick any of them, and you can take their picture today. And then you can go back 2-3 years and look at pictures they have up there, and they are the exact same size.
Even pro bodybuilders don't change much.
Sure.
Like once they build up to their sort of size, the size that they sort of carry, they're that size for 10 freaking years.
Right.
Like, look at Arnold won, what, 6 or 7 Olympias? He doesn't look any different in all of them. Like, he's basically the same size. I mean, that's using drugs, too. Like, they all – there's limits. There's just limits. Otherwise, every guy would be, like, 500 pounds.
Right. Like, yeah, and we'll, heck, we'll invite you to do the same for us. I mean, you know, we'll – it's not like we're not training as hard as we can. I mean, you'll be able to take a picture, look at our pictures this year, and then 2 years from now, be able to look at our pictures, and, you know, it'll be roughly the same. Maybe a little bit bigger, but nothing – might not be that necessarily noticeable. The only thing that probably might be a little bit different would be body fat levels, if those change.
Yeah, the thing that you can have, I think the changes become more subtle, and that you have to be a little bit more like picky with what you're looking at when you're sort of at an advanced level of lifting.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you're not going to have the giant jumps that you had like when you were first started training and when you're in your teens. Like that's sort of, we all remember that, and that, you know, and that was that. It doesn't happen again. The overlap of mechanical and juvenile muscle growth.
Right.
So anyways, well, how are we going to wrap this up? Where are we getting at? I think you touched on it there, is that there's a lot of drugs. There's more drugs than you probably think. And there's more people using than you probably think. And especially when you look at pro athletes, media, and stuff like that. But even the dudes in your gym, there's lots of guys using that you probably can't quite guess if they're using or not. And the doses being used are probably also higher than you think.
Right. Yep. And the unfortunate thing about it is that a lot of these people that you're trying to look up to and model yourself after, because essentially that's what we all do. We try to find somebody who's done it, and then we try to do what they do. The sad part about it is going that route, at least in this realm, lots of times, most of the people that are at the head of the class are doing something that you're never going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so that their methodologies and things like that, for the most part, can become essentially irrelevant. You know, how they eat, I mean, think about this. I mean, if somebody's on that much as far as drugs, you know, even how they eat can become irrelevant.
Well, for you, maybe they actually do need 300 grams of protein. Like, I don't know. Maybe when your physiology changes that much with that much, like maybe that whole, like, you know,
yeah, you've got, you just said the receptors and stuff increase. Yeah, like
perhaps those guys actually do need like significantly more protein, but that's not you. That's them.
I was even talking about cutting.
Oh yeah. Either way with that much, I mean, it's an altered state. Like it's like clinical states when things are different like that, especially drug-induced states. You can't extrapolate a drug-induced state to a non-drug-induced state and assume that the things that they're doing are necessary for a clean body. That's kind of why that within the bodybuilding culture, there's this sort of body of knowledge that's not really recorded anywhere, but it's just sort of understood. And people hear about it and they read about it and they, you know, they go on various websites and they think that that's for them, but they're not. If you're not that far into it and you're not doing what they're doing, you know, a lot of that stuff's not for you. It's interesting to read about, but I guess it's, you know, if you're not using like a gram of testosterone a week and maybe a couple of other little things here and there, what makes you think you need to eat the way that guy's eating?
Right. Yeah, and remember, again, that's exactly what's happening, is a lot of the body of knowledge is coming from people. You know, one person goes and reads about this, they don't realize that this person's on and the copious amounts of drugs that they're on and what they're using, and they take that out thinking that they're going to get that big. Because I think that people, the average person, thinks that if somebody's on drugs, that they're on a little bit of drug, like the amount is minuscule. They don't, and it's not like, when I say copious, I mean, that's like a lot, big word, like ridiculous amount of stuff. I don't think people realize the magnitude of stuff people are on. You know, that to me is probably the biggest gap, is actually realizing, like the normal guy realizing how much someone else is actually on, you know.
And then believing that well, maybe if I just eat like him and train like him and do all the supplements, I'll get like 60% of the way there, and really he's only got like, you know, the other 40s, the drugs, where it's really like the eating that way, the supplements, all that stuff, the training might be 2%, and the other 98% is just this massive amount of drugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So yeah. that's kind of the thing where your people would go in and see that stuff, not realize the actual amounts of drugs these people are on, saying, oh, well, this guy's doing that. Let's take this out and let me go tell my friends. And so then it kind of stirs down, and that's where all of the body of knowledge, you know, about the 6 meals a day and how much protein you got to eat and all this other stuff is coming from, because it's purely based on these guys in these huge drug-induced states. And then people just don't realize, again, how much in drugs these guys are on, and brings it down. So, I think that's, to me, from what I've seen and just talking to people, and you know, even standing beside my buddy at the gym the other day, and you know, we weigh, it's really weird. We weigh the exact same. You know, he's 5'7" or something like that. I'm like 5'11". He's on. I'm definitely off. He's literally, most of his muscles, we could probably argue, besides probably legs, that he's probably double the size I am muscular wise everywhere.
Mm.
Easily. But we weigh the same.
Yeah, but proportionally it's different on when he's that much shorter. Yeah. So.
Oh yeah. Oh dude, he's a tank.
Yeah.
I mean, literally a tank. So. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's good for today.
Cool, man. Well, mm-hmm. Like I say, if you guys got any questions about this stuff or whatever, just you know, submit them in the comments. And like I say, for John Barbin, I am Brad Howard, and this is your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast.